this point, the mystery is far from clear. But what is clear to Telford is that Ruff was true to an early promise and the evidence they had found. Ruff was retracing his own steps. Those are following the detectives. But during this second time around, he was already affected by something dark and taxing, and yet still managed to leave his own trail to be followed. An odd thing to follow two parallel trails at once. But there are clearly different pieces along both sides, such as the mention of those who came between. Who are they? What could Raphael mean by this? These are the questions Telford's notes turn to at this point, and he posits the possibility of a third trail between the two they already follow. With another message from Raphael and a new recording core in hand, the mystery only builds. To some, it's almost insurmountable. To Telford, his excited desire for more information is obvious. This is especially evidenced when another recording core reveals the detectives found a very dangerous book indeed. The exceedingly rare, and in some circles infamous, Whispering Reeds. It is my guess that the dark power of this book is what affected Raphael so deeply and irreversibly. However, the mention in Ruff's note of, quote, finding the empty light is top of the list at this point. The words empty and death also scribbled over and over in an amount that evokes worrying obsession. The connection of these phrasings would give any but this crew a great sense of pause. I shudder with chilling thought, even as I record this now. Wondering if this empty light is connected to the shadow orrery, Aelin sneaked his way up to the stairs on the next level, but found only a disused storage space. As it happens, a nearby librarian caught wind of them discussing the term, and here they finally found something hopeful and helpful as they were directed to an old, mostly unused section of the library, called the Cathedral of Empty Light. So named for its magical windows that depict an artistic interpretation of the silvery astral plane and the River of Souls. And so, the crew ventured this way, no doubt with fingers crossed and hearts guarded. Within this impressive cathedral, they found all manner of magic imbued within its walls and windows, and upon a pulpit, a ledger that Telford describes as beautifully bound and impressive in size. He almost seems jealous of it in his writing, especially when it is found to be new and almost unused. I say almost because a single page was torn from the spine and spotted from the pulpit beneath a pew, crumpled into a ball around another recording core. This time, Ruff's note is of little help. It mentions something about lenses, that they were created but not found here, but something about pages related to them. He begs warning be given to the heroes of Atari, to Tulok, and Physic. It seems he never knew of Physic's death before the end. Nor that of Lady Gilda's, I assume. The recording core, however, offers some startling information. The trail of the detectives leads to quite a scene, as paranoia and suspicion invaded their investigation. And the one called Smolder was in fact a member of the hidden faction of the Della Reese. What's more is the other detective, Scaly, was secretly a member of the Haravex family itself. Both double agents, hidden in plain sight, and opposing factions after the same thing. The Whispering Reeds, and the death of one another.
Hello, dear listeners. So, in the spirit of tying things from Troubles in Otari to this production, I don't know if it will ever be released, but there was an intro banter that involved the difference between Canadian chips and American candy. And I am planning to visit Canada sometime very soon. I may give you my full name, but I will not give you my travel plans.
Well, you don't want to get swamped at the airport.
Yeah, fans holding up Bristol board posters.
All the adoring fans.
Holding up their vision sticks. No, but are there any snacks or delicacies that I should really go out of my way to try when I am up there? Okay, Freeman, you first. What's something I should try?
You have to try a ketchup chip. Not that I love them. When I was a kid, I loved them. But you have to try a ketchup chip because as far as I know, they are a Canadian classic and a Canadian-only thing. They don't taste anything like ketchup at all. But they are pretty tasty. I can only eat really a few at this point. But when I was a kid, I could eat loads. Ketchup, just to me, feels like an iconic Canadian thing.
So just on ketchup chips, because it's weird and gross, when they were like coming up with that flavor, they were trying out a bunch of fucked up just out there like fruit flavors and stuff. So they came out with like ketchup at the same time as grape.
I'm sad grape didn't exist because I love grape everything. Only fake grape though.
Yeah,
fucking real grapes. Well, waste of time.
No one's having grapes and potatoes, but fake grape on my fake potato chip. Yes, please.
James, I think you were going to say something there, buddy.
Ridgie's brand all dress chips. I don't understand how people get through life without all dress chips, and Ridgie's specifically legitimately changed the game.
Ruffles brand.
Not enough flavor in the Ruffles for me. I want my mouth to hurt. Okay.
See, so occasionally you get a bag of Ruffles that does hurt. It was so much. It gets so much flavor, and that to me is the best all dressed chip. It's been a while since I had Ridgie's though, so it's been
get on the Ridgie's brand. Yeah, it's extra flavor now.
Which is the bigger and which is the smaller
Ridge? Oh, like the wave in it?
Yeah,
like the crinkle cut. Ruffles is the smaller.
Oh, I think I like Ruffles better then.
Ruffles is the tiny crinkle cut. Yeah. And I prefer that texture as well. Yeah,
they're a lot softer too. The Ridgies have like a chip bite to them, like almost like a Dorito.
We'll have to do a taste off when Cam comes.
Oh, yeah, we definitely have to. Yeah,
just all meet up at a park. Everybody bring a bag of chips. This is the thing that Europeans don't understand about like both Canada and America is like how fucking far apart like things are. Like they cannot comprehend the scale of things, and so like. You know, me flying to Vancouver, I think is actually closer than Duncan flying to Vancouver.
That's crazy.
It is, for sure.
And that is unreal to me. Yeah. Like, that is like, I live in Texas. We are literally like one of the biggest states in the United States, second biggest state.
Sadly, there's a few industries here in Canada that love to inflate prices just because they have a good excuse for it, and that's one of those is airline prices. It actually, I remember looking at the possibility of going down to Texas just on a whim, flying down to Texas return for Thanksgiving just to see what it would cost, and it was like $400.
Yeah,
I can't go home to the East Coast where Duncan is any time of the year for less than $1,400 or something like that.
Oh,
it's an absurd amount of money.
That is insane.
Our airport tax varies between 38 and 57%.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's wild.
We have the highest flights per, like, I think, geographical distance, and the highest cell phone and internet prices in the entire world.
And shipping is fucked.
And the trains fucking suck.
Yeah, it's insane.
Apropos of nothing, but if any of you do want to come down for Thanksgiving, open invitation. My aunt will love to have you. And you can have American Thanksgiving.
Ooh,
I would love to have an American Thanksgiving. I'm down for that.
No, we've actually had Canadians show up that are friends of like my cousin, and they'll come. One of them has come back twice now because of how much he loves it. He's like, I'm coming down. Like, it's too much fun.
It's like a whole different goal. It's like, oh, summer's coming. I gotta put my beach bod on. I'm like, oh no, I gotta drop weight before I go for American Thanksgiving. Come back a balloon.
Yeah.
But going back to snacks, let's get back to snacks, because yeah. That's the topic at hand.
Yeah, like I was going to say you should have a chicken bone, but that's just an even just a New Brunswick thing, a southern New Brunswick thing, just a candy from the Ganong chocolate company. Yeah, it's like hard peppermint candy with like a stick with a soft chocolate on the inside. They're super good. And they make like a liqueur at the local distillery out of them. That's super good. I usually end up sending out a couple boxes and bottles.
Interesting.
That is a very Canadian thing, though. I didn't think of that. I mean, I think chips are the big hot topic. And I didn't discover this until I moved to Vancouver. But there is a New Brunswick brand of chips called Covered Bridge. And they are the best I've ever had, hands down. Their backyard barbecue, their creamy dill pickle, and their salt and vinegar are like the best of those three flavor categories I've ever had in my life. And I'm very lucky that the store next to me stocks them. And I'm like, I can't believe it. I used to eat tons of chips. I stopped eating chips for a long time, and now I'm eating them like crazy again because I discovered them.
Oh, it's so good. I just like smell those Covered Bridge chips cooking every time I go into work. And like, I got a big bag of them for as a Christmas present from one of the nurses. And, you know, they go around and they never get old.
You should try some of our baked goods and chocolate as well. Like the Nanaimo bar was made in BC.
Nanaimo bar. Good call.
There's a whole museum for it in Nanaimo. Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of chocolate factories that are pretty well known. I think Purdy's is Canada, as well as Rogers is Canadian.
Yep.
My girlfriend's going to lose her shit then.
I don't think Laura Secord is. I think Laura Secord's English, but there are a couple of like really solid.
I thought that was Canadian.
Yeah, I thought it was Canadian.
I think so.
Yeah, so we've got some like really solid chocolate brands and pastries out here. Beaver Tail, if you're going to be in the center of the country, is always fun.
It's like a fried like donut pastry thing. Yeah.
Okay, no, I thought it was legitimately a beaver tail, and I was like, okay, I'm in.
Oh yeah, all right, no, I'll try it.
It's kind of like a baked Alaska that's not been set on fire.
Okay.
They're known as elephant ears elsewhere in the world.
Oh really? Yeah.
But and we do have beaver tails here. I also would like to hop in and give a shout out to Hawkins Cheesies, which are the best cheesies in the world.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hawkins made with real Canadian cheddar.
Gotta get that cheddar.
They're a very particular flavor, like a very particular flavor and texture that, like, I'm glad they just come in tiny packs because I can only eat one tiny pack and then I'm good.
Dude, they are so delicious.
Yeah, we get them on like Halloween.
They're a different level. Yeah. We're gonna have to write these down.
They are rich as fuck.
A list and just a Saturday, and then some of that legal recreational substances, and just, you know, eat a bunch of chips.
Oh, then there's so many recreational substances available in this city in particular.
Seriously?
You get micro doses delivered to your door.
Literally.
No joke. Some bicycle courier will show up with LSD on your porch if you want.
And you booked it online. Yeah, it's just not a big deal.
Canada's great. Like that.
You didn't have to get someone's number. You just booked it on a website.
Yeah.
If only our medical and our education system were half as good as any other country out there, we'd be awesome.
As soon as we're done getting high, we'll get right on that.
It might be free, but it sure ain't good.
Oh yeah, it's real bad, real cheap, but real bad. So yeah. I guess you get what you pay for.
So take it easy on the chips, everybody.
Seriously, but I love my Covered Bridge chips.
Hi, my name's James. We've had a lot of fun here today, but just in case it didn't come through, take it easy on the chips.
We've had a lot of fun here today, but do drugs, don't get sick.
Speaking of legal substances. The glowing lights that you see from the floor below start spiraling around the room.
Barf. Especially after last week. Come on.
One of them is crimson. One of them is ochre. And one of them is emerald. And one of these lights is portrayed from one of the stars on the floor to the middle western side of the cathedral. One is to the middle eastern side. And one is above the fountain at the southern side. And as you make your way down to get a closer look, you can see and feel this magical emanation coming from them. they sort of almost beckon you to approach and step within them.
What do you do?
Did you say step within them?
Yeah, within the light.
Oh boy.
Inside the light.
Okay. All right. Just making
there's
sure.
There's only three lights or there's four?
Are you calling out my language skills here?
No, not at all.
We're legitimately asking questions, Streaming. You don't need to get so defensive. Jeez.
Yeah, a little cagey.
Well, it's just the way you said it. Within them?
No, but...
I'm not James. I don't just automatically think, oh, I'm riding Goku again.
Stop putting your token on top of Goku.
Stop. I want to ride Goku.
Guys, I'm riding Goku again.
It whatever you did just broke my foundry. My Firefox just crashed.
Last time you did that, I had to refresh my foundry too. So stop it.
What, you can't handle a little side saddle?
A little shimmy shimmy quarter turn.
Can't handle a little side saddle.
Just to bring this back, we see the Crimson Fury to the west. We see the Waxen Emerald to the south. And we see the... Which one to the east?
The Weary Ochre.
Weary like Ochre.
This looks a lot like yellow, not orange.
That's just because it's playing off the actual effects. Color of the map. Yeah,
I just want to make sure that we're not being bamboozled. Yeah. I'm with it.
If I move
it
over...
The map does look
beautiful. It's still kind of yellow.
You did a good job.
What I did do was actually find the hex codes for these particular colors and put them in. So,
it looks amazing. I was not trying to, like, I know that I'm a sassy bitch sometimes, but that was not me being a sassy bitch this time.
Arthur and Goku will head over to the ochre light in the west alcove, being careful to avoid the star in the center in case that's the inconsequential, insubstantial ebony.
Right. Yeah, that doesn't seem to have changed at all. There was no light coming from the center of the room, just the sides.
Yeah, so he'll go stand in the Weary Ochre. That sounds like Arthur to him.
All right, so you head, you march Goku along over to the Weary Ochre color, and as you do, there is this like sudden surge of light that envelops you, and Goku and Arthur disappear.
Right, well... I'm going to go see about the Waxen Emerald.
And Talford will step into it.
You step into the Waxen Emerald, and the light envelops you as well, and Talford disappears.
Kraga looks at Aelin. Well, there's one Crimson Fury. Who's it going to be?
You may go through if you wish. You are the most furious warrior among us.
And Kruga will step into the Crimson Fury.
Sure enough, the light envelops you and you disappear.
I would have said something had I known our plan was to immediately split the party.
I don't know why Cam did it. I have no idea.
Like, I normally play very structured, but every once in a while I just have to let the Chaos Gremlin out.
I mean, so Aelin is dumb. And he is confused by the fact that there's three lights. The note talks about, above all, seek the insubstantial ebony. Is there anything in this room, like, that is devoid of light, or...
It's ebon, but which is effectively ebony. Yeah, just a different phrasing for it, yeah. Everyone keeps saying ebony, but it is ebon, but it's basically the same.
Wait, so is something with the qualities of ebony?
Well, we saw the darkness from above, right?
The darkness?
Yeah, we saw the darkness take place in the recording, and then we looked down and shit lit up. Didn't we already hit that part of the note?
I don't remember a darkness. There was a darkness?
Metaphorical darkness.
So there's no darkness, is what we're saying.
No. Long story short, there is no darkness that stands out as a particular darkness.
Okay, so Aelin looks around and realizes that there isn't, like, what he thought there would be. There isn't. Mm-hmm. He thought there was going to be a darkness here to make it four. And so kind of just, like, looking around, being like, oh, shit, well, what the fuck should I do now? You think he thinks of Arthur and is most worried for him and follows into the ochre.
Okay. Aelin, you are enveloped in the light. Roll me 1d3.
I don't like that look on your face, Burn.
Three.
Okay.
So don't toy with me.
You all find yourselves on an impossibly black and dark sort of dock with a rowboat. You're all in the same place, despite separating the party. And you see nothing but black in this rowboat floating in black water. And in the distance, far across the water, is a light that is spinning in a circle.
Like a lighthouse?
Exactly like a lighthouse.
Yeah.
Is anyone familiar with rowing boats?
Yes. Very, in fact.
Might even say it's Harper's expertise.
It's kind of my thing.
That's wonderful to hear.
Literally every morning for the last 30 years.
And you maintain such a prodigious body. Anyways.
You see him wiping the grease from a sausage roll you didn't see eat from his paw onto his cloak as you're saying this.
Truly, the body, the mind reels. And Talford will like gesture towards the boat. Well, I think wherever we need to go, we need to get to there, and we'll point across the dark expanse before pulling out an elixir and a scroll.
Okay.
Arthur will dismount Goku and do his best to get that boat, that goat into that boat.
Wait, do we have to worry about a fox and a hen?
Aelin is confused by this and nimbly hops into the boat and tries to help wrangle in Goku.
Yeah.
Kruga, much more cleverly, hides his bag of grain and gets on the boat.
And you get on the boat. And you start a rowing towards the light. And mostly, I have done this for the sake of this amazing map that we will hardly use, but I really want you all to see it. But you slowly row your way towards this lighthouse, and there's just this, the water is a bit rocky, and you find a spot to sort of dock the boat, and you climb upon these rocks, and there's this magnificent lighthouse standing tall on a rock beyond the water, beyond the land's edge, with a bridge that reaches across to it, and this beautiful beaming light spinning in a circle. And thunder and lightning starts to come down as you approach it, and it is so stormy and beautiful and daunting and terrifying. And you can see at the top of the lighthouse two figures peering down, or rather just peering out, speaking. You cannot quite see who they are, but you can see that they are there at the top by the cupola.
Hello.
Oh, how cool is that? How cool is that map?
It's pretty cool.
It's really cool.
Pretty cool. With the moving water, yeah, rain effects.
Yeah, I added the effects. It's just like the spinning light comes with the map. It's so cool.
All I see is rain, and it feels like it's about to crash my computer.
Oh no! I'll make a GIF of it for you later.
Thank you.
Now, what is this map of 504 Bad Gateway?
Yeah. But yeah, Talford is going to quickly chug the elixir, and he watches his eyes go stark white briefly for a moment. The pupils dilate to let in more light as he consumes a dark vision elixir, and then he is going to take the librarian's staff and touch it to his head and cast translate.
Nice.
How about we wait here for 12 to 24 hours so I can regain some of my magics?
Wait, what? Oh, right, you with the ladders. Well, I kind of just drank the potion, and that only lasts for 10 minutes, so. Pony up.
Goat up.
Goaty up.
Arthur does mount Goku, and he tries to wave to the two figures on top of the lighthouse as they're crossing the bridge to get their attention. Just generally say hello.
Yeah.
Not one to trespass.
And so you cross the bridge and enter the foot of the lighthouse and find yourself in a room that is not typical of the foot of a lighthouse, but it's sort of rectangular in shape. It is just stale and run down and stained, and there are bones of dead creatures and skeletons strewn about, and just sort of some old parchment laying around. Like, this place has been long, long abandoned.
Do they look humanoid?
Yeah, some of them. Yeah, most of them do, actually. The ones that are a little bit intact, they appear to be a humanoid. And as you step in, there is this sort of sudden flash, and this vision appears before all of your eyes. You see this wavy vision of a grand mead hall that presents itself with long tables, barrels upon barrels of drink, and monstrous trophies all along the walls. A place where fighters and gladiators celebrate victories, tease the defeated, and blow off steam before and after bouts. But instead of the usual relaxed scene of warriors making merry over stale ale and scraps of meat, you see them standing in rows at stiff attention as a woman in a beautiful dress passes back and forth, eyeing them toe to crown. In her wake follows a wary man on one side who is unmistakably the wizard you fought in the dimension of time and dreams, Shavkem. He scans the fighters, making notes in his ledger, occasionally side-eyeing the woman. And to the other side follows a handsome dark elf with long white hair, his eyes intensely taking in everything the woman says and does.
Fuck.
And despite the apparent inspection, she speaks to them about something entirely off-topic of gritty arena battles. The cupola is set and fixture fitted.
Yes, it's time. Just in time, Mistress. The twins will be arriving within the week. Their pockets are deep, but their natures are flighty and easily bored, as my spies say. We'll need any eye-catching display we can muster if we want to keep their attention.
The lattice is near completion. Soon we will be able to focus the lenses together. Oh, I don't think we'll need that kind of display. Not yet, anyway.
And the woman stops and lifts the chin of a particularly handsome gladiator who's managed to avoid any facial scars so far. He lets his eyes slip down to hers and gives a light smile. She simply sneers in return and cuts his chin with a nail as she jerks her hand away. His smile fades quickly.
Your bones will litter the ground that I tread, and I will walk over them and atop them, because they are beneath my view. And still, you and they will serve me.
And the room flashes back to your vision, and all of the bones inside start to rattle and jerk and slide across the floor into the furthest northeastern corner and begin to build up a monstrosity before you as this creature forms and readies to attack.
Oh, for dope.
That is cool as fuck, as the kids say.
Yeah.
Looks to be a giant made of bones. Oh.
It's like spine is made of skulls. It's just like, it's a humanoid bone shape, but the bones aren't in the right places. They're just kind of stacked up. It's pretty sick.
And it's got these like little arm bones as a beard.
Let's get some initiative. Arthur of Arrasil, you're in alphabetical order. Let's go.
24.
All right. Aelin Weinmar.
19.
Kruga.
21.
Telford Rawlime.
Telford, always ready for a scrap, rolled a 31.
Woo! Pretty good. all right, we will begin combat with The Bone Gladiator.
Jesus. Somebody stop me. So large creature also, listeners?
Yeah, it's actually a huge creature.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah, Goku's a large creature. This thing is towering over even that.
And the first thing this thing does is a terrifying charge, where it strides and makes a claw strike, perhaps against the nearest opponent, which is going to be, well, to be fair, I placed you on this map. I will allow you to reorder yourself. This is pretty meta, but I'm not going to reveal to the listeners who was where. No, you got to be close to the entrance. Stop moving yourself so far away from the entrance. But I'll allow a slight reorder here.
We basically just flipped.
Oh, that's, yeah, okay. In that case, I'm going to, sorry, listeners, you're not going to get this, but that's fine. I'm going to do a quick roll here. Okay. It is going to be towards Krugga. So everyone's bulked up towards this like very wide entrance. Krugga to the farthest east next to Aelin, Talford a little bit south and further west, and then Goku and Arfur next to that. Again, this creature is in the northeastern corner. Terrifying charge runs at Krugga, takes a strike with a +4 bonus to damage, possibly, if I hit. 26 to hit. I rolled real shit.
Hits.
Okay, 26 to hit. You take 21 slashing damage as this claw comes down on you.
Ooh.
And I get a free attempt to demoralize you with a 28 versus your real DC.
Well, that's a success.
Success. Okay, you are frightened one. And it's going to take a second swing at you with a 32 to hit. Bow.
That is also a hit.
Okay, 17 more slashing damage. Talford, you're up. This thing just... this big fucking rattly bone thing. And just smash, smash in this massive and intimidating presence comes right at your monk friend.
Well, at least this is something I understand.
Talford is going to start shaking his hand at the wrist, just slowly getting faster and faster as you see bits of etheric goop coming off of it before it just firmly detaches and dropping to the ground as you cast Spectral Hand.
Nice.
And then is going to get the fuck out of there. Because that's a big-ass fucking monster, and I don't need to be close to do things. And that is all three of my actions.
Sorry, I'm just adjusting its... it has reach, so I'm just adjusting its position accordingly. Okay. Cool. Spectral Hand dropped. Bounce away. Krugga, what do you got? This thing is 5 feet away from you.
You skipped Arfur.
I did skip Arfur. How did I do that? Okay, Arfur, you're up.
Oh, sorry, did it... Oh, it didn't move up to me to attack me.
Got it ahead of myself. It moved up towards you, but it's got this massive swinging reach, so it's just, it has a 10-foot reach.
Dinger.
Arfur of Rastal, what do you got?
First action, recall knowledge.
Religion, please.
I got that one.
I'm afraid you have no idea.
Okay.
You assume it's undead. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just a given, though.
He does do that, yeah.
It's undead, it's big, you assume it's brute, it's just gonna keep swinging until you take it down. I'll give you that much.
He'll just blast it with Disrupt Undead with two actions.
Wicked.
That's a fortitude save from you, please. DC 22.
Oh, natural one.
Okay.
For a total of 20, which is really close to not being a critical. Natural one.
That will be 30 points of vitality.
30 points of vitality damage. Okay. Damn.
And you will be enfeebled one for one round from the critical fail.
Oh, nice. Okay. Very nice. That's a big old cantrip hit. I love that. Cool. Krugga, what do you got?
Krugga, using his prodigious speed, will run around this thing a full 40 feet to the northeast corner
And to your benefit, it does not swing at you with an attack of opportunity.
Oh, good, because that would have been a lot of attacks of opportunity had he continued to run the entire 40 feet. Yeah. So he will attempt a knockdown. First will be a melee strike.
Okay. Oh, you're doing a knockdown feat. Yeah. Melee strike, go.
33 to hit.
Yeah, that hits.
Okay, so you will take 14 bludge.
Okay.
And then I get to attempt a trip, which will be in athletics with no map. Woof, 22 against your reflex DC.
Not far off, but no, I'm afraid not.
Yeah, that was a really shit roll. But okay, that's a turn.
Okay. Aelin.
Aelin will stride to opposite Krugga and render this opponent off guard.
Okay.
Will draw the Elven Curve Blade because I didn't get to say it before the fight started, which is you went right into descriptions.
Sure did. Welcome to the other dimensions. Everything comes at you so fast.
Aelin rolls a 25 to hit. Off guard AC.
That will hit.
So that is going to be 22 points of damage with the sneak attack.
Okay. You can tell that some of your slashing damage does not fully go through, yep. But it's still a great hit. Still a great hit. That's a step up, a draw, and a slash.
That's it.
Beautiful. Okay. This thing is going to... well, it's not terribly smart, so... Let's see here. Krugga, your frightened should come off, by the way.
Damn right it should.
And yeah, I think this thing is going to it's going to move to the northwest a bit and get away from both of you.
Krug is going to follow using stand still. Oh, no, sorry. Krug is going to use stand still
okay. And
make a melee strike. I was thinking no escape.
Different
does that
character.
Provoke?
It provokes the stand still, yeah. So it's you try to strike out.
Does it provoke an attack of opportunity? Yeah.
Yes, it does. Yep, you have that,
then
yeah?
I as well will get in on this.
Well, you're going to need the luck because I rolled a 20 on my melee strike.
Ooh, and I rolled an 18, so thank you for the luck.
No dice.
We're just both standing there flailing at the bone giant as it walks away from us.
This thing marches away from you, both make an attempt to swing at it, and then it turns its sights on Aelin, who is in its 10-foot reach, and takes a swing with a 30 to hit.
That'll do it.
And it's 19 slashing. We'll take a second swing with a 19 to hit.
Miss.
Not so much. Telford.
Telford will unleash Psyche.
Yup.
Screaming out at this creature as he forms his hand, pulling the palm away, creating a blunt imaginary object before handing it to the spectral hand that scampers across the floor, leaping into the air to smash this creature in its face. Amped up. That is a natural 20 for a 32.
Yeah, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Get some. Here we go.
Get right through this thing.
Okay, and then it is going to be 5d8 plus 10, doubled. So 39
times 2.
39 times
2?
78.
78
Jesus
points of damage.
Christmas. What?
You destroy this thing in one massive punch. What the fuck?
The spectral hand delivers this blow. And as it cracks open the skull, the imaginary weapon explodes and sends all the pieces of bones flying in a circle for 10 feet.
Just everywhere. Yeah. Which is actually perfect because if you crit this thing, it actually becomes clumsy one because you loosen all of the bones.
Shit.
So you've just like done it in one fell swoop and the whole thing just falls apart. And that's combat done.
Oh, that's how you hit that thing. Okay, I was, when you said unleash Psyche, I was kind of hoping that sometime I want to have like a character with a dog named Psyche and you just unleash him. Because it would be the perfect thing against an enemy made of bones.
Out here collecting these bones.
I unleash Psyche. I want so many more of
those. Arthur will throw up a detect magic.
Aelin looks over his shoulder and is just like, holy shit, Telford. That was an incredible strike.
And you watch as like his eyes fade back to normal.
Was there ever any doubt?
Any object of extreme necromancy and power, Aelin is slowly becoming weary to allow Telford to have. Especially because he keeps pocketing all of the all of the recording orbs and like everything kind of along the way. He's just like keeping stock of the fact that like Telford is slowly building this like repertoire of information that if he wanted to, he could murder us all and continue on by himself.
Yeah. Which is like a vibe. I'm sure you've got your vibe checking him right from back from the Rod and Bow Club. Cause like,
oh, I'm vibe checking him big time.
That's all he do is read information and absorb more and take more in. And
smoke darts.
Yeah, I'm here to smoke darts and read books, and I'm all out of books.
I hate books, and I'm kind of asthmatic.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, you have this empty room before you now with the bones scattered everywhere again, and the only thing that stands out is the staircase that leads up to the next floor.
Thorough search.
Thorough search.
Is there anything up in this bitch of interest or nah? There's papers around.
No, there's like, you go over to like a piece of parchment there, and as soon as you touch it, it just crumbles into dust.
Is there anything on the creature?
Nothing on the creature, no.
Telford is going to spend 10 minutes refocusing, putting back together his mind after unleashing Psyche and making a mess of it.
Arfred's going to take the detect magic exploration activity.
Aelin drops down and avoids notice.
Krega's going to drink a healing potion.
Oh, I can just treat wounds on you, dude.
Probably should.
Don't forget you've got a cleric in the party. Old habits die hard.
So as Craig is nursing his wounds and unstoppering a potion, maybe he is doing it very slowly while looking at Arthur.
Anytime. You could stop me anytime now.
Oh, Jesus, this hurts real bad. A potion might help
you. This hurts me?
He's pretend reaching his wallet when he's out for dinner with his parents.
Oh, I left it at home.
15 for Kruga and 15 for Aelin. Do you guys need more? Are you good?
I only need 4 more, so I'm fine. My spindle will take care of it.
I'm still down 23.
Okay.
Do you have continual recovery, Arthur?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
16 for Kruga.
Yeah, that's good enough.
I mean, we can wait another 10 minutes and see what happens. If we don't fall into combat in another 10, he'll do another treat wounds. And I guess if they don't detect any magic, he begins making his way up yonder staircase.
Up the staircase you go. As you step up the staircase, it kind of loops around, and it seems to stretch into complete darkness, a darkness that reminds you of being on the dock with the boat before you cross this dark, dark water to this ridiculous otherworldly lighthouse. And as you step into the darkness, you find you step out of the fountain in the cathedral. The emerald light no longer hovering over it, but hovering over the ledger, the northern end of the room. And as soon as you find yourself back in the cathedral, the room resonates with the magics of this apparent portal that you just stepped through. And of course, the recording rod starts to hum as well. It doesn't come to life quite like it's activated, but you can feel this hum coming from it, Telford. And the image of Detective Smolder tumbling down to the floor from the balcony above, smashing into a holographic pew And Scaly, or Kalido, as he called himself, comes diving down after him, and everything vanishes just before he hits the floor. And the stark straight ahead view is the glowing emerald color around the ledger. And you can still see the ochre and crimson lights to the east and west. Still glowing. I went with a real video game flow here, by the way. As I was thinking, I was like, this is a total video game.
Big Elden Ring guy, eh?
Hell yeah.
With two mice.
Elden Ring with two mice.
Aelin stands guard with his sword out below the dais here and allows people with more intelligence to approach it.
Our friend Goku will trot up.
Talford will follow behind Goku, careful to step over any droppings.
Kroga knows this place, and it's down here with Aelin.
You approach the ledger, and it's the cover that is glowing this emerald glimmer, and you pull the cover open, and on the page there are now notes, and it says at the very top, these seems to be written kind of hastily, but there is this like elaborate image and diagram pasted there, or like drawn there, and at the very top it says page 98, and the diagram is of a concave green lens that is pitted and flawed. It's described with jagged edges that cut if not handled with care. There is a note that says invocation, pallidity, as in becoming pallid. And there's an annotation that reads, will invert some of the life essence, partially attunes one to void energies.
Arthur's snout drops. These lights, these lenses, this is how she did it, I think. I think these are the tools that make it a gauntlet work.
Tell me more.
It raised the dead, and they rampaged through Otari. It was of nightmares, horrible. Many were lost. It's where I met my friend, Gilda.
I see. So this was used to focus necromantic energies from the Gauntlet all the way to Otari?
This is what I suspect. Obviously, I cannot confirm with these readings, this pallid green light. Green, red, yellow. I wonder if that's what gives it the blue hue, the color. Does anyone here know color theory?
I'm a little outside of my bounds here, but why is all of this information in this place? It doesn't seem to have anything to do with the Horovexes, but is it because of the empty light?
Talford will take out a cigarette and light it.
Who built this place?
I believe this is a place of spiritual focus for their families, given the fact that he knew how to play the organ and he knew how to get up here. He knew where the books were. He clearly knew this place.
Hmm.
So I do believe this was a place of importance to them. The question that remains in my mind is, how did they get from the Whispering Reeds to this? And why are they trying to get the Whispering Reeds? If they're capable of producing a lens that can focus necromantic energy, void energy, to raise undead from... in Talford, how far away is Otari from the Gauntlet?
Oh, like a half-hour walk down the trail kind of thing.
So like half a mile?
Some miles.
2 miles?
I don't know measurements.
Okay. You can do it in kilometers if that's easier.
No, it's my incredible weakness. I can't tell you how wide my room is. I have no clue. visual measurements do not work for me. No, I have no idea.
How did we go this whole time not like not realizing that you don't know how big your room is?
I'm exceptionally bad at visual measurements. I know. I can't do it. James is going to tell you. Okay. I have no idea.
That can be edited out.
No, we'll keep that in matter. For the listeners.
No, this is a future intro banter, if anything. We're setting the seeds now.
It's come up on the encounter this for sure.
Can you do feet, Cam?
Yeah.
From the path in Otari, it's 1950 feet. To circle around to Otari, it's almost 3,000 feet, according to our map of Otari.
No, 1950 is like third of a mile, because it's,
5280 in a mile.
It's imperial and fucked.
Yeah.
Okay, this turned into a math podcast, and I'm not interested.
No, like, I was trying to bring math it back finder. To measurements. It is Mathfinder, first of all. Yeah. But anyways, just the ability to focus energies that far. Like, most ray spells peter out at 120 feet. We're dealing with something that's a magnitude larger than that. Or more.
Perhaps it's not light. It's the in the ebony one.
Insubstantial. Yes.
Yes. Perhaps it's not. It's the insubstantialness of a delight that makes it go that far.
That was a character choice, just so the listeners know.
Telford just takes a drag of his cigarette, staring off into the middle distance, like. Yep, that's all light is insubstantial to us, right? Like there might be some measure of weight, but in terms of what we can perceive, right?
Aelin's eyes are glazed over.
Right. Anyways, I think
Arthur's beady little eyes have stopped beating.
Aelin blinks a few times and then kind of returns to his body, and he turns to them and says, perhaps we'll find more answers if we follow the other lights.
No, let's talk about this for another 30 minutes.
And there, right there is the stark difference between Aelin and Tulok. They might seem very similar, but Tulok would engage and be like, tell me more. And Aelin's like, move on.
He just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
He's just some himbo that likes to steal shit.
I love it. Arthur would not be opposed to taking a long rest here.
No, don't. There's no time for naps yet. We still have more to go. Now,
man. Ever has no spell slots.
You still have your healing font, don't you, cleric?
Yeah, I still have the healing font and all my cantrips.
Then you're perfect.
Which Disrupt Undead was, so he'll be all right, probably. Okay, so what James is assuming happened is that the overwhelming majority went into one light, and that's the one we triggered. Except that the D3 landed on a 3, making it the Emerald. So he put the odd man out in the Emerald. Best guess. So that means if we all go into one, we're going to get that color. Because that's how not splitting the party works.
Yes.
So do we want to go to Crimson Fury? Or do we want to go to Weary Ochre? One is going to be debuff. One is going to be a fucking powerhouse.
Two favorite Mountain Dew.
I would say that. If we're going, when we go into Fury, we should rest before that. So why don't we do Ochre first?
I mean, I'm guessing that there's going to be a fourth battle after the three.
Scott, have you considered?
Yeah, when it reaches its full potential.
Scott, have you considered? I'll just keep rolling nat 20s and one shotting things.
I considered it.
Okay. Yeah.
Call it a day.
And then I realized I'm not good at math, so I stopped.
So let's do that.
Let's go into the yellow one.
Yeah, yellow one it is.
And then get in a rest before it absorbs Android 16.
All right, the order in which you enter I'll allow you to do this now properly, is the order in which you will effectively appear where you're going to appear.
God damn it.
Krug is riding Goku. Or Krug.
Oh, no. How did I do that?
God, stop getting on Goku.
How has this never happened until today, and now everyone's up on Goku?
You're all a bunch of bozos.
Something's different.
Jeez, I can see forever on this thing.
I can see my house from here.
Who's going in the first?
Krukka, Aelin, Arthur, Telford, I think. Unless somebody says otherwise.
And Arthur is taking the detect magic exploration activity.
I am avoiding notice.
Scouting.
You step into the ochre light, and as you do, you feel your feet on firm stone, but you don't quite see what's in front of you, but rather another vision, of course, comes across your eyes. And standing within an antechamber of a small stone building, you see a queenly woman watching a various amount of servants drag cart and armloads of goods ranging from valuable armory items to alchemical concoctions to straight-up cold hard coinage, all slowly rolling it in through this antechamber into different designated rooms. There was a looming clay statue of the same woman that stands to one side in silent vigilance. The carving of its facial features are done in a far more monstrous and otherworldly motif, with darkened eyes and sharpened teeth. Major contrast to the serene and terrifyingly beautiful yet hateful gaze that she usually wears. A militant-looking drow approaches her through the front door of this room, saluting and waiting for her to engage, not the same drow you've seen so far. And she says,
"You have news on the temple?"
"Yes, my lady. The lady's whisper still will not let us pass, and none have come back from the trials. But it appears one of their cult seeks an audience with you."
Her eyes kind of furrow her brow, and she says,
"And where is this creature?"
And suddenly the room is bathed in a pale gray glow, startling the laborers and even widening the eyes of the woman herself, but only for just a moment before a viciously satisfied smile spreads across her face. And as this vision fades around you, you find yourself in the next floor of this lighthouse. More tables and bones and skeletons and parchment of old scattered about. And very, very much in the center of this room, a gray, pale light is glowing across all of you. And you see floating above you a gray and pale creature with this sort of gray orb smoking and writhing with a ghastly face in its center that looks like this.
Yucky.
Then we're going to roll for initiative.
It's like a woman's face coming out of smoke and kind of horrified looking.
Power Rangers?
No, people's.
Something tells me that Krug is not going to be able to punch that thing too easily. Neither is Krug.
15 feet above you. Initiative. Aelin, what'd you get?
31, baby.
Arthur?
28.
Telford?
28.
Oh. Who's got the higher bonus?
We get to choose between ourselves.
Oh, sure.
I'd like to go first unless James really has something he wants to do.
Well, I was just going to drop a recall knowledge. That's the only important thing to me, so.
Okay, yeah, you can go first then, if you're going to do the recall knowledge. That way I know some stuff.
Okay. Let me just adjust that. And who am I missing? Kraga?
Kraga, 16. Not even worth mentioning.
Well, that's sad. Let's start the combat with Aelin Weinmar. You're up.
Okay. So it's in the air.
It is in the air. It is floating more or less in the center of the room, not far from Goku and Arthur, 15 feet above the base floor.
So I'm 5 feet tall, and it's above this table. If I climb onto the table, will I be able to strike it?
I'll allow it.
Okay. Okay, so Aelin hops up, definitely onto this table, circles around the enemy, and then will feint with the elven curve blade, brandishing it to this foe.
Faint deception versus my will, do you see?
Perception?
Perception. Oh, my perception. Right. Okay, I got it.
So it's a 29?
Yeah, that succeeds.
Okay, so
off guard to this attack.
Oh, sorry. Yep. That is going to be brutal roll. That's just 13 points of slashing damage.
Well, you still need to roll to attack, so.
I did, 29.
Oh, I thought that was your deception.
I rolled a 29 as well for my attack.
Oh, God, get your order of operations in order.
Is it a hit?
29 is a hit, yes.
Okay, well, I rolled a shit 13 slashing damage. Technically, 6 slashing damage and 7 whatever sneak attack is.
It just doubles up on whatever damage you're doing, so it's your sneak attack damage is the same as the damage you're upping.
Boom. 13 slashing.
Wicked. And all right, that's your turn. Get up. You just run around, get up on the table, and swipe and strike true. Arfur.
First action will be that recall knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Occultism, please.
Fuck.
I love getting the groan from James on these.
Now balls.
I see you rolled occultism. You have no idea. You have no idea what this is. It is a glowing gray orb face, and it's terrifying.
Okay.
When Aelin hit it, did it look like it all went through?
Yep.
So it's a head ensconced in an orb. Is that correct? That's just floating?
I mean, it's like orbish, but then it's just like smoky and writhing and moving all around, and it's really hard to tell.
It's a weird will-o-wisp.
Meta-wise, it is a weird will-o-wisp. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Rather than the skull being inside the orb you would see, this one is like much more defined. It is a 3D face, yeah.
Okay, so Arthur is going to try a diplomacy check to request this creature stand down.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out how to use diplomacy checks in combat, and it's very challenging.
It is, yeah. Usually hackles are raised and everything's going down pretty heartily, so.
Yeah, usually the mind's made up.
Yeah, this happened to him, you know, it wasn't like the last one where it threatened. We just showed up in this room and Aelin hit a skull with a stick, so he's going to at least try.
Yep.
All right.
That's a natural 20 for a 31.
Oh!
Making a good case for it.
Give me your line. Tell me what you say. I can't wait for a natural 20 from Arthur on this. What language are you speaking?
He would speak in Taldan for sure. Common.
Common, okay. You just hear a that's Mrs. Orb.
Mrs. Orb. Va weep, Grana. Weep, Nineba.
He's just transformed.
Listeners, that's the universal greeting from Transformers from 1986.
Oh my god.
I don't know if it got caught on tape, but I asked. It's like he just fucking transformers them.
Oh man.
My name is Arthur of Arastil, and as long as you mean us no harm, we mean you no harm. We come from a different place and perchance a different time. We are on a quest, and it seems if you allow us to go up the stairs, we can complete that quest, because the quest is going up those stairs. Or so it has appeared in the past. So would you be so kind as to not attack us?
And she hisses at the direction of Aelin as you say, we mean you no harm, after taking a fucking sword to its entire body, which is its head. And it's like, yes! You mean me no harm? How can I believe this?
Aelin tugs, free action, tugs at his collar.
Steam rises out from the collar.
Arthur starts like rooting through Goatku's saddle bags with a fury.
We bring you gifts.
And he comes out with a gold piece. Looks at the skull and is like, no. Pulls out a torch. He's like, we bring you light and warmth. And he flint and steals and lights up a torch.
She hisses again. Tell me what your real goal is. Climbing stairs.
is not enough. Tell me now, or you will perish.
I am following the footsteps of my recently deceased nephew in order to try and destroy, or hamper, I suppose is probably a better word, tragedies befalling my hometown of Otari. These are my friends and companions, and we have done one such level of a lighthouse that looked much like this once before. And at the end, after we ascended the stairs, it kicked us out, and there was information about a sharp piece of glass. And we require information about a more different sharp piece of glass this time. A yellow one.
There's this confused look across her face, as you can imagine. But she's trying to absorb the information as everyone seems to be staying their hands. She says,
"You seek a reconciliation with your family. Would it be fair to say you seek revenge?"
"No, not revenge. Justice, perhaps."
"Then what do you think you are capable of doing? How far will you bow to seek your justice?"
"As far as it takes. Family is family, and they deserve every effort that I could possibly put into it. I am an old man, as you see before you. I am an old Shuni, as you can clearly see before you. I sit atop the strong goat who is my best friend, because walking stairs has become too hard in my old age. Life is short for me. It was long for him, and I wish to give what little he had meaning. This is why I come. This is why I sit in front of you."
"Your willingness to go as far as it takes will have you stoop. You remind me of another. You may pass. I am Sakwishu, and I know not how you pulled me through to this time and this place. But I will resurface, and I will do what I would do for you, and hamper those who would oppose such a goal."
And the creature vanishes before your eyes.
"Oh, I feel bad."
"Thaguisha, your kindness will not be forgotten. We thank you."
"That's Sakwishu."
Tealock does the grimace emoji and just wipes ectoplasm off his blade.
"Let's do it one action. How are you?
To shreds, you say?"
James, you can have a hero point.
"Thank you. I appreciate that."
Yeah, that was super fun. You were teetering on the edge of the right answer that whole time.
Oh,
I was looking for any excuse to resume combat.
As soon as it started talking about vengeance, I was like, oh, this is the way that it sucks the life out of you. It's going to do something here. But no.
The weary ochre.
I think I know what that was. That would have been scary.
Say it.
A surprisingly friendly, magnanimous, disembodied head.
Yeah, totally. That's all it is. Same deal. Things crumble underfoot and in hand. There was little of value. Rather, there's nothing of value.
Arthur and Goku head up the stairs. Arthur's sitting a little bit higher than he was before, having talked his way out of a combat for the first time in probably 40 years at this point. His track record is real bad with that.
You find yourselves back at the cathedral, of course, as you might predict.
What?
Hot damn.
There's got to be a more efficient way of getting around.
And as soon as you enter, sure enough, the ochre light has dissipated and has appeared upon the podium with the ledger. And then there is a flash. In fact, there are multiple flashes of a gruesome battle between the false detectives that start to present themselves all across the room. There's They are incredible. There is like this intense match of skill and cunning between them. Sure, one of them got thrown down, the other one jumped down top of it, but at this point, it's hard to tell who is actually maybe the top dog in this combat. You see these snippets of martial and magical prowess that smashes through the room in all of these magical images. Both land and deflect brutal blows as these sort of secret titans just go toe-to-toe across this room. And the room pulses with energy as the memories sort of sunk in here into the magics here grow and then subside. And you see that ochre light upon the ledger.
Hot diggity damn. We did it.
Yes, very well spoken.
Talford will go inspect the book to see if anything's changed.
Aelin follows with his weapon out in a defensive position again.
You get to the ledger and you see another page within that says page 62 and the diagram of another lens with the description that says it is brownish orange, the appearance of being dusty, described as appearing to be dusty even when wet. The invocation is listed as lassitude, which one might also describe as lethargy, weariness. And the annotation listed says that this one grips the faculties of the mind. You and your enemies, beware.
Ominous.
Very much so.
This whole place gives me the willies.
This one has me less sure that these were used to make the lens, but...
You never know. It could be all of them together.
Yes. Yes. Do we wait or do we attempt the Crimson Fury? I'm not confident in my abilities to talk down something whose main adjective is not sloth.
Quite the opposite.
I feel somewhat more confident being able to take on the Fury.
I as well, considering we expended zero resources in the previous encounter.
I mean, I did expend a torch, but yes.
Ah, I see. And our Talford will hand you a torch here.
He'll take it. He'll put it back in Goku's saddlebags. Why the fuck not?
I suppose time is of the essence. Come. Let's enter the Fury.
And like he's done so many times before, he follows Mr. Weinmar to the red light.
Yep.
And you head towards the western light filled with crimson. You all step in. And that's what we're going to call it.
Ooh, no rest for the Fury.
It's so weird because it's going to be a little unbelievable that we have solved both of these encounters with natural 20s.
Seriously, though, no, you really did.
That is unreal.
Just the system at work.
Stemming the Tide is an actual play podcast of the Adventure Path Abomination Vaults, and is produced by the Uncharted North Network. Stemming the Tide uses trademarks and or copyrights owned by Paizo Inc., used under Paizo's community use policy. We are expressly prohibited from charging you to use or access this content. Stemming the Tide is not published, endorsed, or specifically approved by Paizo. For more information about Paizo Inc. and Paizo products, visit Paizo.com. Music is composed by Will Savino and artwork by Greyhood. Stemming the Tide is recorded remotely using Foundry Virtual Tabletop. If you wish to connect with us or support this project and projects to come, we can be found at unchartednorth.ca, patreon.com/unchartednorth, and on all major social media platforms. Links to all credits can be found in the episode description and our website. Thanks for tuning in.